Hello and welcome to Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. Today we have a real treat. Today is actually the birthday of a solar saint, and his name is Herman Scheer. Happy birthday to you. And we have a friend of Herman Scheer, because we can't get Herman here because he left this planet in 2010. He was born in 1944, and so that makes him 80 years old today. We're recording this a little bit earlier, but we're getting on board, and we're going to release this on his birthday. So that's a great thing. And so I have a friend of mine and one of my favorite people, one of the smartest people in the world and in the solar industry, Ike Weber. And let me just give a little brief introduction about Ike right off the bat here. And Ike, go ahead and correct if you like to. Ike was the director of the Fraunhofer Institute for Solar Energy Systems, and that's like NREL in Europe. Is that right?
That's about right. It's, of course, smaller than NREL. NREL is more budget, but with 100 million budget, we are not so bad neither.
Great. And so Ike was the director for 10 years, and he's also been on staff at the University of California, Berkeley. And so he's a German, you could tell by his accent, but also he's been in California a lot. I think, do you still have a house here in California?
Yes, we do. We spent just last winter from November to March in our house in Napa, California.
Oh, in Napa. Yeah. And I remember we were supposed to go and have dinner at Skates one of these times, too, when you're out here.
Oh, so. And let's not forget our sailing trip on the Bayshore. This was very, very impressive. I remember this very well.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So we went out with Bill Brooks and I own a sailboat, and we took Ike out on the sailboat, and we surprised him with a surprise guest who's Madam Me.
Yes. Yes, Madame Me is the mother and owner of SNEC, the world's largest PV show. And as a matter of fact, I got another invitation for June of this year to come and give an opening lecture there.
Oh, great. So I might go. I haven't decided yet. So I hope to see you there. And it kind of reminds me, too, that I've seen you in so many different places. I know California is probably where we first met. And yes. I'm sure Intersolar Germany a number of times, SNEC a number of times, probably some other Intersolars like Intersolar in Dubai. And I know for sure we were hanging out at Intersolar in India because we did some things. We went in a cab together. I remember in the cab on the way from the hotel to the conference that we shared, you were telling me about fusion and what's the status of that. But that could be a whole other podcast.
Yes, actually, it would be interesting to avoid sinking too much money into fusion. I like fusion research for the acceleration of plasma research and so forth, but never, never sell fusion research as solving the world's energy problems. I don't see this coming.
Yep. And then also, let's see, you are very active with the International Solar Energy Society.
Yeah.
And you also work with, the Clean Tech Business Club.
Oh, very much so. Yes. Yeah. And with the European Solar Manufacturing Council, ESMC.
Yeah. Yeah. And that we probably could go on for about an hour talking about all these types of things. And I remember, too, in California, I remember you knew the governor, and so did I. We both knew Governor Brown. And did you help with the California Solar Initiative? I think you were here around that time.
Yes. As a matter of fact, what I was really very proud of, I was the one who brought Intersolar to San Francisco. And in its heyday, Intersolar San Francisco was really a great gathering spot. And of course, there were one, two other solar gatherings in the United States each year. But Intersolar San Francisco stayed in one place in San Francisco. And I think it had a good impact there. And I still remember this incredible, really emotional introduction that the Governor Jerry Brown gave us in San Francisco, that spontaneously everybody raised to their feet and gave him a standing ovation afterwards, because Jerry Brown really had his mind set the right way in terms of supporting renewable energy. Yeah. As a matter of fact, just this November, I visited Jerry Brown again in his ranch, where he showed me not only his solar system, but as well his rainwater collecting system. So he collects his own rainwater in a deep underground storage and uses it for irrigation and so on. No, Jerry Brown, very, very great guy. And Jerry Brown founded as well this initiative to have interested regions around the world. And I think right now this initiative brings together 200 regions around the world. It started with California and the German state of Baden-Württemberg. I had helped to bring these two entities together. But now it's really 200 regions are unified in trying to reach the fastest possible transformation towards 100% renewables.
Well, I have an idea too. Maybe we could get Jerry Brown to be the first 100-year-old president someday.
Yes. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was in Berkeley and I visited a good friend of mine, George Lightman, who was a very, very highly, how should I say, highly admired scientist. He was as well dean of the College of Engineering. And when I visited him, and he said, "Oh, by the way, on March 9, my wife gets 100 years old, and I hope to achieve the same a year longer." So the couple, Nancy and George Lightman, will get 100 years old each. And I think
Oh,
this is
wow.
an incredible achievement. So despite having a very demanding life, a very tight schedule all his life, he was going around the globe many, many times. He can reach 100 years, and his wife Nancy already achieved this year.
Wow, 200 years of living. Wow.
Yes.
Pretty good for a couple. That's might be a record, some
I
sort of
have
a record.
never seen a couple like that. I have never heard about a couple like that. So let's keep our breath and celebrate together next year. Then I think it will be in May 2025 when George as well reaches 100.
All right, well, happy birthday, George, and then also happy birthday, Hermann Scheer.
Oh,
And
yes. My God, Hermann Scheer is really such an important person in the history of PV, especially, of course, in the history of PV of Germany, but because Hermann Scheer was the one, together with Hans-Josef Fell, who made the feed-in tariff a reality around the year 2000. They convinced the German parliament. Hermann was in the Social Democratic Party and Hans-Josef Fell in the Green Party. And at that time, the big political fight was about getting rid of nuclear power. And what these two guys were talking about, solar power, was nothing important for the big power companies, because everybody knew that solar power is a nice thing, but much too expensive for use on Earth. And therefore, people didn't pay much attention to it. And they were able to bring through Parliament a law which allows people to produce solar electricity and get paid for it for 20 years, a fixed rate. This is a so-called feed-in tariff scheme. And this really was absolutely instrumental to bring the PV market into rolling, because suddenly everybody who invested in PV could get a decent return on this investment, guaranteed by the state for 20 years. So it was incredibly successful, and they were able to avoid putting a cap in this legislation. That means the legislation did not say we support the first 100 megawatts or whatever. It had no cap. And it was not using taxpayers' money to pay for the feed-in tariff. The feed-in tariff was paid by simply charging all customers of electricity. So whoever was a big electricity consumer contributed more to it than poor people who had only a small electricity use, you know. So it was a very, very well-designed system. The only thing which was a design flaw is that they never anticipated how quickly the cost of PV electricity could come down. They put into the law 5% reduction of the feed-in tariff each year. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the data, 13% would have been the right amount. And this means after a few years, people could make really, really good profits from buying PV modules and selling the solar electricity at the feed-in tariff price. At some years, you could easily make 10 to 15% annual profit guaranteed for 20 years. I mean, this is the reason why it was so fundamentally, so incredibly successful. The only point and mistake the Germans made was that they agreed to accept this feed-in tariff, but they didn't do anything to support PV manufacturing in Germany. And there were, of course, companies, SolarWorld, Qcells were the two main companies to produce PV. But the Chinese were much, much smarter. The Chinese government in about 2006-7 recognized that the future of PV is a very, very important building block of our future energy system. And they decided to set aside, and people say it's not confirmed, but this was the analysis, about $50 billion as credit guarantees. You know, what I'm always saying is, if in 2008 you could spell the word photovoltaics correctly in China, you could easily get a $1 billion credit guarantee to set up PV production. So the PV production in China mushroomed in the different regions competing against each other, who was fastest, who built up the fastest. And in the meanwhile, in Germany, Qcells and SolarWorld, they had no government support of this kind, and they tried to set up their first gigawatt of production at a time when the Chinese were already planning 5 and 10 gigawatt of production. And therefore, it was not surprising that 2013, 2014, prices fell through the bottom. There was a gigantic overproduction, and this killed PV industry in Germany. But as I said, Hermann Scheer, Hans-Josef Fell, they really succeeded to really bring this whole thing in motion. I am afraid we might be 10 years back in terms of the cost of PV electricity without their initiative and without their vision. And Hermann Scheer was really the main mover behind that.
Yeah, so like if the price went back, 10 years back, if it wasn't for Hermann Scheer, then I'm trying to think maybe PV right now would be like five times as much, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, because you see the price learning curve, the curve which shows the cost of PV decreasing with time, has its horizontal axis, not time. The horizontal axis is total volume deployed. You know, these price learning curves you have for any technologies. You can make it for automotive, you can make it for microelectronics, and so on. It's always the same. The horizontal axis is not time. You don't gain and you don't decrease the cost by just waiting, but you decrease the cost by increasing the volume of the industrial output. And of course, this industrial output was greatly accelerated through this feed-in tariff scheme, and therefore it was really a very, very important impact in accelerating the cost of PV coming down, because it really brought PV from the hundreds of megawatts to the gigawatt. And we all celebrated in March 2022, globally, the first terawatt of installed PV power.
Yep, another great celebration. And so I think that cost curve, I think a lot of people call that Swanson's law. And so every time you double the amount of solar
Yes,
in the
you
world,
decrease by 20% or something like that.
yeah,
Yeah.
about something around 20%.
Exactly.
And it's
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
and it
yeah.
works for other things and electronics and things like that too. So
Yeah,
that's
exactly. The curve for PV is called Swanson's law, but this price learning curve existed already much longer for other technologies, you know. So for people who study business, for them it is a quite normal phenomenon.
Yeah, so perhaps like if they only made one iPhone, it might cost $1 billion.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Then I
Exactly
wouldn't
right.
have one.
Yes.
Then there'd only be like a couple people that might have one. And so, yeah, the feed-in tariff, or a lot of people call it the FIT, it really took off. It really kick-started the solar industry.
Yes,
I
yes.
remember going to Ontario, Canada, and doing a lot of solar classes there around the year 2010 because they had a feed-in tariff. And so what their price was for smaller PV systems under 10 kilowatts was 80.2 cents per kilowatt hour, and that's a 20-year contract. And so if I was there in 2010, then there's people that are still getting that until 2030. And so I think even with the German feed-in tariff too, they had different prices for different sizes of systems and things like that. So like promoting rooftop solar and things like that. Another thing that I really liked about the feed-in tariff, and it also was like this California Solar Initiative, is when it dropped down, it usually did it gradually. Like people would drop down the feed-in tariff amount
Yeah.
gradually instead of all at once, like what we have in California right now with net metering 3.0. Have you heard about that? Where they're
Net
they
metering 3.0? No, I haven't.
Yeah, and so kind of just to sum that up is like with net metering, what we've had is you
Yeah.
get credit for exporting your electricity, like you get
Exactly.
retail rate of electricity credit for
Like the
exporting.
counter runs backwards, yeah.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden with net metering 3.0, it's kind of not really net metering because you don't get full credit. You just get a little bit, like maybe a couple cents a kilowatt hour. And so it's good for batteries and things like that. And I can see why they might want to do that over time with so much solar on the grid. But just all of a sudden having like 1 second in time where they completely change everything, it caused all these thousands of layoffs, a lot of companies going under and things like that. And so with the feed-in tariff and with the California Solar Initiative, which was our rebate program that we had like 15 years ago and around that time, plus or minus some years there, it dropped off gradually. And so it wasn't a big drastic change. I know even with when they were getting rid of the investment tax credit, but they brought it back. But then when it drops off, there's this one step where it's just this huge step. I don't like sudden changes as far as, financing and things worthwhile go. So that was another good
But
thing
as a
about.
matter of fact, it's maybe a little bit dangerous to say this in public, but PV electricity is now so dead cheap that it really doesn't need much external support anymore. Let's say you have a company with 100 employees, medium-sized company or so. If you put solar systems on the roofs on your parking lot so that you can supply your daytime electricity from solar power at 1 to 2 cents per kilowatt hour, because that is a naked production cost if you run the system for 20, 30 years and collect it. So for that, you don't need any incentive. You just should do it based off the economics of the system. And it's very interesting to observe that in the United States, where you have the investment tax credit, for reasons which people don't understand, PV is much more expensive than in Europe. In Europe, you can buy PV systems of the order of $1 per watt or $1,000 per kilowatt, and this means ready installed on the roofs with everything.
So you're talking about rooftop
Yes.
solar for $1 a watt.
For utility scale system, it's 0.6 or so per watt, $0.6 per watt, €600 per watt. And I bought my PV system in Napa last year for $2.2 per watt. And this was still a pretty reasonable price.
That's
I got
a
offers
really
from,
good deal. I'm sure
yes,
whoever installed
exactly.
that must have been doing you a
Yes,
favor.
but I think people should come to understand you shouldn't have to pay more than $1 per watt. Absolutely not. But many reasons there are as well. Of course, partly it is fee, local fees, because communities like to use solar systems as a source of income for their budgets. But I think in reality, solar is absolutely economically and should be recommended for own consumption by many companies, by industry, because if you can really create your own electricity for, let's say, below 5 cents per kilowatt hour, you save a lot of money compared to buying the electricity out of the wall plug.
Yep, that's great. And let me just put in a word for incentives because, of course, we like them and it helps us get there faster. But it would be nice to lower the permitting fees and things that, like, it's, in
Yes.
some ways, the permitting
Yes.
fees in California are as much as the whole solar system costs in a lot of other
But this
places.
is completely crazy. Why should solar be such a source of income for communities here?
It's got to be a source of income for bureaucracy.
Yes. Yeah, because permitting a solar system is a no-brainer. A solar system, if it doesn't work, the owner of the solar system has a problem, right? Because it doesn't create solar electricity. So why to have a cumbersome permitting system? The only thing what should be regulated is electrical safety, security. That is, of course, a thing. You don't want to kill people from wrong installation and wrong wiring. But that should be the same level as permitting for any other large electric installation.
Yeah, and just the other thing too is with the subsidies, if they do get rid of them, or they will over time, perhaps, is I just ask people out there to do it gradually. I was even thinking about having an organization with a mission to just educate people not to drop the incentives suddenly because big steps, people trip
Are
over them
hurting
and
the
break their
industry.
legs.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because people make business plans with an existing situation, and if that sudden changes, then you're sitting there with your investment.
Great, great. And so to Hermann Scheer, some of the things that he was involved with, I was just doing some research, the Solar Saint, and I guess you guys were friends, right?
Yes, I remember an afternoon in Johannesburg in South Africa. There was a solar conference, and we both had arrived earlier, and we spent a whole afternoon. And Herman explained to me how he was able to push through the feed-in law For instance, it was very good that in the critical moment, Hermann got awarded the so-called Alternative Nobel Prize, the Livelihood Award. He said when he got this, and suddenly he noticed people didn't dare to say you are completely wrong and so on. So he's still standing in the Social Democratic Party, and it was really very helpful to go through. But Hermann Scheer was extremely disappointed by German politics because in later years his main work was for the creation of IRENA, for the International Renewable Energy Agency.
And that's very well
And
known.
yes, and when IRENA was finally created, of course, it was very clear that Hermann Scheer would have been the perfect founding director because it was his idea, it was his baby, he had pushed it through. His reasoning was we cannot leave it to the International Energy Agency to be responsible for renewables because renewables are different animals than oil and gas. And therefore, he wanted to have a strong IRENA. But his friends in German politics, especially Gabriel was a politician in Germany. He never made it to be chancellor, but Gabriel was a minister in charge of environment, and he would have to give his okay that Hermann Scheer could be founding director of IRENA. And I talked with Sultan Al-Jaber from Abu Dhabi, very powerful person. He was the chair of the last IPCC conference in Abu Dhabi, you remember? And Al-Jaber told me personally he would have loved Hermann Scheer as founding director of IRENA, but he should have been proposed by the German government. And the German government, under the leadership of Gabriel, refused to propose Hermann Scheer because Hermann Scheer was from the same party as Gabriel, and Gabriel didn't want to have Hermann Scheer as the famous person being founding director of IRENA. So this was a very nasty story. I think enough time has passed that one can talk about it openly, but this was just incredible. In Germany, we have the saying, if you are somebody's enemy, it's bad. You can be a deadly enemy, it's worse. But the worst is to be party friend, to be in the same party as the other party, you know, because in such a party, there are so many jealousies and infighting, and nobody wants the other one to get more famous, more important, more publicly known. And this was why Hermann Scheer was refused to be founding director of IRENA. And I can say openly, this might have contributed to Hermann Scheer's early death because he was really, really heartbroken that IRENA was founded without him. They took a French lady who was the founding director of IRENA. I don't remember her name, but she was an advisor to the French president. And her main achievement for IRENA was that she succeeded, that there were 50% of all staff female. She was very proud about this achievement, which is honorable. But of course, with IRENA, with the strong leadership like Hermann Scheer would have provided, I think IRENA would have developed a much more strong public standing as we have it today. Luckily, IRENA exists and works well and plays its role, but still it plays its role in a limited way. And I think with Hermann Scheer's governments, it might have been a different story. So this is really Hermann Scheer's last battle. But of course, let's come back to his achievement and his positive impact. And after all, IRENA exists, and it was as well his achievement that IRENA came into existence.
Yeah, I remember doing a class 2 years ago in Masdar in Abu Dhabi, and they pointed and they go, there's the arena building. And so I guess that's the
Yes.
headquarters over there.
Yes, exactly. There's the headquarters. And as I said, because Germany was very eager to try to get the headquarters, but when Germany recognized that the headquarters went to Abu Dhabi, because I think Abu Dhabi was simply financially making a much better offer to IRENA, Abu Dhabi was very, very open to have in replacement Germany providing the founding director. At the end of the day, Germany got an IRENA office in Bonn, which does a good job, but I think it was personally disastrous for our dear Hermann Scheer that he was not appointed the founding director of IRENA.
Yeah, and so also Hermann Scheer wrote some books, and I guess he made a movie, or there was a movie that he was involved with.
Yeah. No, I mean, Hermann Scheer has been a visionary about the use of PV for people on Earth from the beginning. Because really, you must go back in the 1980s. Nobody thought solar energy could ever contribute anything to power on Earth. Energy was being used to power satellites, because if you need to power satellites, you don't ask about the price per kilowatt hour. You price ask how many kilowatt of power can you put in a payload to bring into orbit, and the cost really doesn't play much of a role. But for domestic power, you have the competition with fossil energy from oil and gas. And nobody could imagine that this cumbersome solar system, which needed semiconductor technology and so forth, really high-tech technology, could ever come down in cost to be even close to competitive. And today we can make solar and electricity in sun-rich countries for 1 cent per kilowatt hour. So we can throw out of the water all other competitors in terms of power production. Solar is the lowest cost power on Earth.
1 cent per kilowatt hour, and thanks to Hermann Scheer. So
Yes, yes.
thanks for that. Maybe 10 years forward, so that's pretty incredible.
And by the way, do you know that today we celebrate as well 70 years of PV? Because at Bell Labs, the first photovoltaic cell was publicly announced in 1954. So we have now this year as well 70 years of PV.
And that's also the founding of the American Solar Energy Society and the International Solar Energy Society. So we call them ACES and ISIS.
Yes.
And then I'm right now the president of NorCal Solar, which is an ACES
Ah,
chapter. And we're
yes.
celebrating our 50th birthday. And so we're having a
Very, very good.
50th birthday a couple of days before we release this podcast.
Yes, that's very fitting. This year we should not stop to celebrate, because in addition, we have, of course, really now the breakthroughs with this 1 cent per kilowatt hour, which is making solar electricity the lowest cost electricity on Earth, period.
That's incredible. We interrupt you for a very important announcement. Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast has been brought to you by Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. That's right, Sean White is sponsoring his own podcast, and he wants to remind you to go check out some of his classes. You can go to SolarSean, that's solar, SEAN.com, and then click on the links to check out his classes. You can check out his heat spring classes, and you can also hire him to teach classes for you, like at your company, something like that. Now back to the show. So happy birthday to Hermann, and let's see, is there anything else that we should talk about right now?
No, I think really the main point we should maybe talk in concluding is really the issue of where do we produce PV, because this is a very important issue for the coming years.
Definitely.
You all know that the Chinese, because of the really, let me say it clearly, the really very wise politics of the Chinese government in 2008, in the 11th five-year plan, to really have the vision that PV power will be most important for the future of the Earth and for the future of the People's Republic of China. And therefore, they were wise enough to form the basis for the thriving PV production in China. But today, we are in the situation that the PV market is growing. It's growing annually by 20 and more percent. And we are heading from the first terawatt to the 10 terawatt. We are expecting in 2040, 45 to have globally installed 50 terawatts, 50
Wow.
times more than we have today. And of course, we should now think about carefully where this PV comes from. We are very happy to get the cheap PV modules produced in China, and they are of first tier quality. There is no discussion about that these modules would not be of best possible quality. But of course, the whole world is very, we don't want to be dependent on a single supply. We all know that China is changing from a country with a very open and liberal economic policy, which was started by Deng Xiaoping, very famous president of China, who really put China on the path into an open, liberal economic world. But since a couple of years, this policy has changed, and China suddenly thinks they would be wiser to spend money for building up their military might than to invest it in industry. And therefore, people around the world are really getting wary. And let's mention that we had this experience in Europe. We were very much dependent on gas coming out of Russia, and suddenly Russia makes a completely unprovoked attack on another country in Europe, the Ukraine, and therefore Russia is now under heavy sanctions, and the cheap gas from Russia is a thing of the past. And I think we should not even think about that. A similar thing happens with respect to China, and there is a problem of Taiwan, but we should just be prepared to have no dependency, no 100% dependency on one country. And therefore, I think building up PV production in other countries is a very important task for the coming years. And this should, of course, as well be supported by the governments, because we all have a strategic interest not to be too dependent. We don't want to create autonomy. We want to keep still free trade. We want to keep importing solar modules from around the world, from wherever. But we should always worry about an own production base. And in the United States, we can be very fortunate because the US IRA Act provides the basis for building up this industry. It is underway in many different ways. Same thing is happening in Europe. We have as well in Europe similar initiatives, although we don't have such a favorable government support mechanism as it is offered by the US IRA. In Europe, they are more used that companies have to apply for support, and maybe they are granted support or they are not granted support. Beauty of the US IRA is it's a clear cut law. Everybody who produces PV modules, everybody who produces batteries in the United States can enjoy the help offered by the US IRA, because the US IRA is a very smart legislation, because it doesn't give out government taxpayers' money. The US IRA essentially gives back taxes to be paid by those companies. In other words, if this industry is not created, this tax income would not happen. The state would not have money. But if the industry is being created and there are tax monies flowing to the government can, of course, reimburse part of this tax income to these companies. So very smart system. And I congratulate really the United States. And I'm happy that even in the current problems with Republicans versus Democrats, it was possible for President Biden to push this IRA Act through government. I guess John Kerry helped as well in the background, because he has been the energy czar, and I'm sure he helped grease the wheels and so on to come through. And I think in the next couple of years, we will see US PV production to be developed and to flourish. And that's good for all of us. We should have a solid base, especially as from the technology, we still have technology. We still have NREL, who has worked on PV technology for more than 20 years. We have my former institute, Fraunhofer ISE in Germany, in Freiburg. We have other worldwide technology centers. As a matter of fact, Sean, do you know that in June, we will have the next Terawatt workshop? The Terawatt workshop is an instrument which I convened for the first time in the year 2016 in Freiburg, where we brought together specialists in PV from around the world, from NREL, from Australia. Martin Green and others came. And the result of this first Terawatt workshop was a paper in Science published in 2017. First author is Nancy Hegel. So if you look for Nancy Hegel, you can easily find this paper. And in this paper, we analyzed the future of the PV market, and we proposed different scenarios and different growth curves. And from 2016, now we are in 2024, the data which we have realized are just on the most optimistic of our proposed growth curves. You know, and this optimistic growth curve says that in the year 2030, we should have a market between 3 and 5 terawatt annual installations.
Wow.
We should reach more than 10 terawatt globally installed. So I think this was quite successful. And now I think in Asiloma in June, we will have the fourth of this terawatt workshops. And let's see what we come up with and how we summarize the outlook for the PV global market today.
Okay, great. So that's Asilomar, and that's in Northern California. That's not too far from where I am sitting right now. So
Yes. And
it's a
it's
beautiful place.
in the first part of June, and maybe you have a chance to come by.
Yeah, okay, great.
I
I'll
would
see you
think it
then.
would be worthwhile to do that.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Ikey. Thanks for all of your contributions to the solar industry. I'm sure between you and Hermann Scheer that the planet's about 1 degree C colder than it would have been, and that's 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit. We got to remind these Americans here that there's a difference between Fahrenheit and Celsius.
Oh,
Yeah.
yes.
So when they talk about 1.5 degrees Celsius, I believe that's 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit,
That's right.
doing my math right. And so it's a
Yes.
bigger deal than we might think when we're setting our Fahrenheit thermostats here. So,
Yes, and honestly speaking, not doing something quickly about the climate and our CO2 emissions is really not an option. We have to drop everything and make sure to reduce CO2 emissions. And one very powerful way to do this is the fastest possible transformation to 100% renewables.
And another thing is, I'm just gonna like not breathe as much. No,
Oh,
yeah, no. No.
I think there's an over importance on the contribution of the individual, because the big numbers, the gigatons of CO2 emission, you must change. You must stop using fossil coal, fossil oil, fossil gas. You must change this. You cannot stop the cows to emit methane when they are burping and so on, but you can change, because basically the situation was as follows: hundreds of millions of years ago, when the Earth had 700 ppm of CO2 in the atmosphere, when the temperature of the Earth was really 5, 10 degrees hotter than today, there was no ice cap, seawater level 50 meter higher than today. But then the Earth started to store CO2 in the part of woods which what were covered and which fossilized, and this lot of stored CO2 or stored carbon, and therefore the carbon content of the atmosphere went from 500 ppm to today's 200, or not today's, yesterday's 200 ppm. And then we enjoyed for 1 million years atmosphere content of between 220 and 280 ppm. 220 ppm, we always had an ice time, an ice age. 280 ppm, we had a warm time. And now we are at 420 ppm. So we are far out of the range of the last million years. And we are working on bringing the Earth back to the times of the dinosaurs, when we had 500 ppm of CO2 in the atmosphere. So absolutely horrendous what we are doing right now. And I think it's worthwhile all our efforts to do whatever we can. And this is really much more important. It's good if you eat less beef. Nobody should eat more beef than needed. But more important is really make the right decisions, buy a PV system, make sure that you push for the right politics in terms of the rapid transformation of our energy system.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much, Ikey. And I'm hoping that another time we can talk again.
Sean, it was a real big pleasure. And maybe if you can make it to the Terawatt workshop in Asiloma, might
Okay,
be
I'm going to look
pretty.
it up right now and I'm going to go check it out. Asilomar is beautiful. I did a talk for Grid Alternatives there a number of years ago, and it's a great place down there.
Do you know Nancy Hegel from Enwell?
I'm not sure,
I see,
but.
because it's in principle an invitation-only workshop. So
Oh,
you should look up some of the organizers, but I can help you with that if you want.
okay. All right, great. Well, thank you so much.
Great. Has been such a pleasure talking with you, Sean.
Yep, and I'll hopefully see you soon. And it's always good to talk to you. I love talking to you, Ikey.
Same
Ikey
with me.
Weber. Thank you so much, Ikey Weber. And happy birthday to
To
you.
you,
Happy
happy
birthday
birthday
to
to
you.
you. Happy
Happy
birthday,
birthday,
dear
dear Hermann
Hermann.
Scheer. Happy
F-F-E.
birthday to you. I think our time is off. by a little bit here with it, just
yes,
like
yes,
this.
Yes, but you use it as you. But you know, 80 years of Hermann Scher, 70 years of PV. Isn't that a wonderful double celebration?
Uh-huh. Great. And yes, all kinds of reasons to celebrate. Thank you so much.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Big pleasure, Sean.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Sean White's Solar and Energy Storage Podcast. To find out more, go to solarsean.com.